Welcome to the Spike Feed, your leading Magic the Gathering podcast. What is up? My name is Curtis, and I'm just your typical Spike. On the line with me, V-neck in tow, a dissatisfied scowl on his face because we're a couple days behind, my good buddy and producer extraordinaire, Cameron McCoy. How are you doing, friend?
Good, and a little scared that you're going to replace me one of these days. Like after our little pre-show talk, like I don't know where our relationship is anymore.
Cameron, ask yourself, who else is going to fit into that V-neck like you do?
Yeah.
I mean, just keep yourself, you know, in shape. And when we're out of these things and we actually meet people, one of us needs to not be a profound disappointment. So we're counting on you here, Cameron. Okay?
Okay.
You know. Anyway, Cameron, it's been a busy week. We're a little spilled over in terms of everything that's going on. We just want to touch upon a few more Guilds of Ravnica cards. Set looks, I'd say, filthy. Filthy. And I would say I haven't felt this way about a set in a long time, but then Dominaria, I think, was also filthy. and then we're going to talk a little bit about the Jerry Thompson thing and kind of go through his critiques, because I think that's kind of the more interesting thing than talking about whether he should or shouldn't have. I'm guessing you didn't even know the World Championships were this weekend. So
you know, I actually opened up Twitter for the first time and saw a Jerry Thompson tweet. So, you know, I knew it was happening.
Oh, nice, nice. So he really raised awareness for the event.
Absolutely.
But Cameron, let's start this episode, like we start every episode, talking about what we've been playing this week and our adventures in Magic the Gathering.
So this week I played some Paper Legacy and just continuing to get reps in with the Grixis Control list. And Grixis Control is Grixis Control. It is a very solid deck. I feel like I'm 50-50 with almost anything I play against, which is pretty nice. The one thing that I would say the deck is lacking against is a good enchantment removal. Like black, red, and blue, for whatever reason, there's just not a lot of good ways to destroy enchantments. And so like if something gets on the battlefield that you need to get rid of, you better hope that you have like some other sort of like sweeper removal that can deal with it, like an engineered explosives, right? So this week I got to play in paper too, which I haven't played at my shop in paper in a long time. So that was really nice to just, you know, see the Legacy crew. We have a really cool community. And yeah, it was kind of crazy because this week, Friday Night Magic, there are 17 Legacy players, and a standard tournament does not fire off. I mean, like, what sort of world do we live in, Curtis, where that is the world? I mean, like, I'm totally okay with it, but it's also, like, bonkers crazy, you know?
Well, first of all, Cameron, I just think that warps your perception of what's going on in the Magic community at large.
Exactly.
By a pretty notable degree. But secondly, because you embody the thing that we hear all the time whenever we talk about Legacy and kind of how we wish Wizards would do more with it and how it deserves to be more on a pedestal than it is. I always think of those things as us speaking very positively about Legacy, but our audience doesn't always take it that way. And the number one response we get is, my shop's fine, bro. I got 16 people. And I think this is what Cameron's becoming. He's becoming a Legacy bro.
It's 100% true.
And I'm the guy that didn't get picked for the fraternity. I want to be a Legacy bro, but I can't.
It's true.
It's very dispiriting, Cameron.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think you really enjoy this. So
I mean, there's a little like haha point, you know, like a little finger poking or whatever, right? But yeah, anyway, let's just talk about the Legacy thing. So this week I played against Miracles, Rug Delver, and Mono Blue Artifacts. I had a super early morning on Saturday, so I dropped after that. I went 1-1-1.
Was Miracles the draw?
Yeah, right. Yeah. So there's Cameron's like you know, his standard win ratio, I think. Miracles is a really good deck. Like we went to time on that, and yeah, there's not a lot to say. Like, I think those decks are like two of the best control decks that you can be playing, and they're pretty evenly matched up. I lost against Rug Delver, and you know, I felt like I did all right. It was really like my deck that was bricking on me where I just got mana flooded. Where, I mean, he's like wastelanding me and I'm still drawing lands and just not being able to cast any spells while he just has a Delver that's chipping away at me one time at a, you know, one at a time. So it was just like that sort of matchup where I just didn't feel like it was totally good. But it wasn't, it was just the deck's fault. It was just the sequence of draws. And then lastly was Mono Blue Artifacts. I had total respect for this. It was super fun and interesting and weird. It was kind of like a little bit of a brew. But I mean, Snapcaster Mage and Culligan's Command, I mean, what is he going to do, right? Yeah, so I mean, there's that. And I actually won because I was able to top deck a Culligan's Command and win. So it was really, really tight and it was fun and interesting, but I mean, not something I expect to see when we're in St. Louis, right? So like, this is the reason I'm going there. And like, that's the other thing is like, I feel like my shop, while we have a really good Legacy scene, the Mayhem Magic scene that I have here, the Mayhem Comics, I would say the meta is like not the real meta that you see. You see some very weird, obscure, obtuse decks, which is awesome, but it's not the Legacy meta that you know and love from Star City or anything else. So that was the week. I don't know. It was good. It was really good.
Well, I would say we're going to run into some new Legacy decks, probably. Like, Legacy Humans is becoming more and more of a thing. That's becoming kind of the aggro deck du jour in both Modern and Legacy. In Legacy, you get access to Imperial Recruiter, which is a pretty good thing to add to the deck. You could play Stoneforge Mystic as well. And, you know, we don't know what else is going to be out there. Assassin's Trophy, I believe this will be the first major Legacy tournament in the States where Assassin's Trophy will be legal. So we might see more, you know, green-black X decks than we otherwise might. It's going to be really fascinating. Cameron, are you familiar with the concept of the Mendoza line?
No, sorry.
Well, it references a baseball player named Mario Mendoza. I pulled that up on Wikipedia just now. I didn't know the guy's first name. But it references where you are in relationship to batting 200. So you could be above or below the Mendoza line. I propose to you the McCoy line, which is exactly the same amount of wins, losses, and draws in a Magic the Gathering tournament.
I love this, man. This is so good. Let's put a wiki entry in right now.
Because, honestly, I feel much better about a Magic tournament if I'm above the McCoy line than below it.
As you should be.
And I feel like you've hit an unusually large amount of tournaments where you are exactly 500. You have won, lost, and tied, like, right even across the board. It's really amazing.
It is. I mean, I don't know. It takes a lot of skill. We'll just say
I like the idea of you going 1-1-1 and going, I am satiated. Time to go home.
Like, I'm out.
I guess, yeah, that's probably what happened, right? You won your one match, and you're like, okay, everybody, I'm out of here. Peace. But, hey, I played some Fetchless Storm again. And I would love to tell you that I've come down really fast and hard. What happened was my daughter had a softball tournament that lasted several of these days, which is kind of the main reason that we're late. I'm going to blame my child. I'm going to be that
it's
guy.
Great. It's great, Father.
I'm going to be the Mark Wahlberg. Some of you get that reference. But anyway, I'm going to be that guy. Has nothing to do with the Chiefs game on Sunday.
Nothing at all.
Nothing. Nothing. And our new quarterback, who's already in three games in his career, the greatest quarterback of all time.
Oh, tell me about
it. Yeah. That's the guy that throws the ball, Cameron. So, here's the deal. I played Fetchless Storm. My store had 20 people for Modern. We had five rounds of Swiss in the top eight. I mean, it was kind of like, will this tournament ever end? Mm-hmm. I lost to humans, which I feel like I always lose to when I'm playing Storm. It's a tough matchup. If the humans player is remotely decent and this humans player is quite good, he names Grape Shot in game one with Meddling Mage, and it's just like, welp, okay. It's really tough for me to get out from under that. I have to have a bounce spell pretty much right then because they can present such a fast clock. And then I lost to Bloom Titan in a really weird game where my opponent basically had running Swan Songs off the top. And he swan song my past in flames. And then when I tried to flash back my past in flames, he hit swan song again.
Okay.
Yeah. Like, well, what are you going to do? Yeah. So, anyway, but I ended up cashing the event. I went to top eight. I was against Mardu Pyromancer, which is a really good matchup for me because they kind of tend to load up on discard spells, which can disrupt me. But if they don't have any kind of clock, it ends up not mattering, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, but modern is modern. You know, I might do one final standard tournament this coming Friday if it ends up working out with my schedule. But like everyone else, I'm ready to brew, right? I'm so ready to brew. And I think I'm probably just going to play Green-Black Elves to start with because that seems like a very easy deck to transition to after I've been playing Steel Leaf Stompy. But, dude, I mean, everybody at the shop was talking about Standard. I'm super ready for it.
Good.
So
yeah.
Okay, Cameron, we are going to get out of this segment. We are going to come back and talk about a few other things. This week, we'd like to thank a few of our patrons, Christopher Nemeth, Sam Upton, and Bill Jannon. Thank you guys so much for supporting the show. If you'd like to become a patron, go to spikefeed.com and click on the donate button. All right, Cameron. So before we get into it, Mystery Box, friend of the show, Brian Dale, told me that I need to say how much we are up or down week to week. So...
That's true. Okay.
Overall, since we started X amount of weeks ago, we are up still 27.98% with a dollar amount of 284.02, but we're down week over week 1.18%. And you are charting this on the website with a sweet graph.
Kind of, yeah. I think I forgot last week, but yeah. We'll keep that thing updated as long as the mystery box keeps on going.
Oh, Cameron. Nothing can stop that train. We're riding it all the way to the ground, all the way till, you know, nuclear apocalypse. There's nothing but Twinkies and cockroaches and the mystery box, okay? They will find my skeleton clutching it in my basement, okay?
Yeah.
It'll be like that scene in Terminator 2, only instead of kids on a swing, it's just me in my basement holding
the mystery box.
The only mystery box.
I want to see this scene now.
Right.
So
right. Do you know who Ty Lopez is?
No.
He's this guy. He does these YouTube videos. It's kind of become a meme where he's like in his garage and he's like talking about, he's some kind of like financial planner or something. I don't know.
Okay.
But he's describing his Lamborghinis. But he's like, you know what I want like more than cars? Knowledge. And then he shows his bookshelves that are behind his Lamborghini. I just need to shoot a video like that just has the mystery box behind me.
Absolutely.
And my Toyota Corolla, you know?
I love it.
Yeah, right? That'd be epic. Anyway, Cameron, so before we get into Jerry Thompson's thing, I do want to mention that I tried to get a little bit more research into the Amazon selling Wizards of the Coast stuff directly. And I wasn't really comfortable with the amount of information I was getting. I saw a lot more reaction than I did actual hard, like the hard press release. And so I just want to let listeners know that, you know, we were looking into it. I devoted upwards of 6 minutes of research to it, and I just couldn't find what I was looking for. So we will cover that as we see something that's maybe more interesting. It is a really bizarre thing and something we're talking about. But more importantly, we want to talk about this thing with Jerry Thompson. So...
Mm-hmm.
I'm just asking, Cameron, do you know who Jerry Thompson is, was? Had
oh,
you
yeah,
ever?
Yeah. I mean, I read his articles on Star City a lot. So, good guy. I like his content. He's obviously a very, very good Magic player. Insightful, all that stuff. So, yes, I do know who the guy is. Or
okay.
I love him.
And so, basically, he was invited to Worlds, which is the highest purse Magic tournament in the year. And in a way of protesting it, he decided not to play, right? He posted a big Reddit thread about it, and WotC put together a response. The WotC response, I think, is just like, hey, he told us that he wouldn't show up. This is unfortunate. We're looking into some of these things. I mean, Cameron, off-the-cuff opinions before we get into the actual blow-by-blow of what he wrote.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have any?
nothing. I mean, like, this is Cameron's just coming out right now. Just saying, if there were no professional Magic players, I'd still continue to watch Magic and still very much enjoy it. Obviously, I wouldn't be able to get the insight into interesting decks nearly as much because the pros really are who bring, I think, innovation in a lot of ways. But yeah, there's that. Like, Pro Tour, pro stuff were to go away, me as a Magic the Gathering enthusiast would not be affected. I'll say that. That's my opinion there.
Okay. Yeah, my criticism, I think, has always been a little misconstrued in the interactions that I've had. I feel like we need to go one way or the other. Either nobody's a pro, and the tournaments are super high purse value, and you don't have a pro system. You just have, hey, this is the X amount of Pro Tours. People just qualify for that one. When they qualify, they can win 50, 60, 80,000, whatever the purse is we can throw at it, and then the whole cycle starts over next time. There's no gravy train. There's no, you know, there's no buys. There's no anything. It's just everything. Every tournament is a hard reset. Mm-hmm. And there's tournaments that are like that. There's organizations that are like that. The other way is to have a circuit of pros, and you know, some of the esports do this, where you have pros on staff, right, that compete at a high level, that you basically are salaried, that spend all, you know, 40 hours of a working week streaming your game, promoting your game, blah blah blah. But I feel like what we have now is a real half step.
Yeah.
Where everybody wants the benefits of one thing, but not the kind of negatives of the other thing, right? And that includes Wizards of the Coast. That includes some of the pro players. And that's tough. It's tough because we've kind of built this system, and now it just feels like it's got a really weak foundation, but we keep stacking on top of it, right? Mm-hmm. So here's what he said. And I'll just go by these and see what you think or don't think. So Wizards of the Coast do not pay professional players a living wage. I think that's probably pretty obvious. You have to win. Yeah. You have to be on a pretty sick tear. But should they, Cameron?
Once again, I mean, if WotC wants that pro prestige, I feel like there needs to be some level of compensation for that. I mean, I would say if WotC is going to have a pro system, then yes, it needs to pay a living wage, if not a better than living wage. Yeah.
Yeah. Or, I mean, pay really. I mean, if you win a pro tour, that's like the absolute peak.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like not, it's a fraction of an average person's salary, like in a year, you know? And so I would agree that this doesn't pay them a living wage. And again, if we're going to keep on this Pro Tour circuit system, then that's a problem. Mm-hmm. Wizards does not promote its players well. I think that's obvious.
Obvious, yeah.
Most of the players that I play with at the shop at a standard or modern level do not know who pro players are. I don't know if that's been your experience as well, Cameron, but...
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's like some people who are like Magic... enthusiasts that really have a deep appreciation of the game, and they obviously know who the pros are and whatnot. But on average, yes, nobody knows who the pros are.
WotC's communication is notoriously poor. Yep. Okay. We can skip past that one. I don't even know that there's anything to talk about there. There are not enough Pro Tour invites to satiate the player base, which is, I think, is interesting. Like, should we have a larger Pro Tour? That's interesting. I don't know if that would be good or bad for the game if there were a larger number of people attending Pro Tours or if they were easier to get into. I do think there is some prestige associated with, hey, that guy was on the Pro Tour last year, you know?
Sure.
Now, here's the one I think is interesting. Coverage is still abysmal. Fair or unfair, Cameron?
Well, I mean, if you listen to Spike Feed episodes 1 through 100, 102 through 300, I think we've like laid our thoughts pretty clearly as far as like what we think of coverage. Yes, it has improved over the last 5 years that we've been doing this podcast. Is it where it should be? I think not, but I also really struggle with how that should be delivered. And, you know, I mean, there's 100 opinions, and I think there's 100 ways that you could probably deliver pro tour, like pro coverage. And, yeah, so yes and no.
Okay, this is the one.
Abysmal, no. Bad, yes.
All right, this is the one I take the biggest issue to, because I want to get – I'll get to the sixth one. Here, let me just spoil the sixth one. He says, basically, cheaters should be punished more extensively. Cool. I can get behind that one. The coverage is still abysmal. If you scroll down where he's like, solutions, hire commentators who can follow the game. So, and then he kind of keeps going, who are familiar with the formats and provide engaging commentary. Okay, stop. Stop. I have no beef with any of this, and if he wants to sit out Worlds, that's fine. Okay? But laying the problems with coverage at the feet of the commentators needs to be done. Mm-hmm. That is the element of coverage that has improved the most. That is the element Absolutely. Of coverage that has gotten gotten better in the last 5 years. Like, I remember when they first started streaming and you would watch GPs and stuff, and commentators wouldn't know what the cards did. You know, like, it would be completely mystifying. But now you have... you know, Marshall and this dude, Riley Knight, who I think is exceptional. I mean, guys, just because you are the person on camera does not mean you are the one dictating the production. And to me, that is just not the perspective that needs to be taken. The thing that I've been banging the drum for 5 freaking years now, and I don't know why it's so hard, give me a digestible 2 or 3 hour recap of this Pro Tour. I cannot, for a whole weekend, watch 20 hours of content. I can't. How hard is that? That is the problem with coverage. Yeah.
You're watching sports ball.
Yeah, I know. Like,
yeah, no.
You know how much I would love it if I just didn't pay attention to Twitter? I was just Twitter muted, which, okay, maybe that would just be a benefit within of itself. And then Monday night, I just sat down and just watched 2 hours of this and just watched the best moments, the best games, the best interviews, all in one condensed package. That is where coverage can improve. Guess what? You can do that with a bunch of the esports stuff. I can go back and watch a ton of Evo on demand that's really short. Mm-hmm. And I can't do that with these Pro Tours. Like, if you sit down to go, okay, I would like to watch, like, if you would like to go back and watch the Pro Tours, or the World Championship this last weekend, Cameron, where would you go? What would be the order you go in? What would you do?
Mm-hmm. I mean, search for the deck that I like, maybe? I don't know. Yeah.
Meanwhile, if you decided to become a real man and watch some good American football, Cameron, and I said, okay, you should watch the Jets game from last week, I bet if you searched Jets game for last week, you would get a link to buy it, no problem.
Mm-hmm.
And you get to watch it, right? And watch the recap. So that's the thing that I just really strongly disagreed with Jerry on. And a lot of people just like off the cup, oh, yep, coverage still sucks. It's like, no. You need to watch one from 5 years ago and watch one now.
Mm-hmm.
It's the content delivery. It's not the commentary.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, sorry. I'll step down from my soapbox. That's
good,
Cameron.
That's good.
I love how I get so passionate about this, Cameron, but you're like, because you work in production, you're probably like, well, maybe they should. You probably have this more nuanced and actually educated view of it, but I just.
Yeah, I don't know. Scrap it all.
Yeah. Yeah. Fire everyone. That would be your, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Hey, just want to go through three more cards. Three more cards, Cameron.
Just three.
Yeah. Let's start. How about you start with Pelt Collector?
Yeah, man, we have Pelt Collector. It costs one. It's an elf warrior that costs one that has a power and toughness of 1/1. Whenever another creature you control enters the battlefield or dies, if that creature's power is greater than Pelt Collector's, put a +1/+1 counter on Pelt Collector. As long as Pelt Collector has 3 or more +1/+1 counters on it, it has trample. Hello, black green elves, right? I mean, like, in standard, like, this is going right next to Llanowar elves, and it's off to the races. If you can get past a Goblin Chain Whirler by turn, whatever that would be, maybe 4, like, I feel like this thing is just singing, and it's right there with Steel Leaf Stompy, or Steel Leaf Champion, and, you know, everything else. So good card. Standard, I think, if there's that black-green standard deck that is going to be an Elves deck that is pretty decent, this is an absolute must in it. And, yeah. Other than that, maybe in Modern Elves, but maybe. I mean, you really are looking for other things to ramp, I think, in Modern. So, yeah.
Yeah, I played. So when I played against Combo Elves on Saturday, they were already playing the M19 two mana Elf Lord in that deck. So whether that's good or bad, I don't know. I didn't like stop and talk to the guy about the choices in Modern Elves. But dude, this card, what's interesting is it's like you want a hand that has either this or Llanowar Elves.
Yeah.
It feels like if you have some weird combination of the two, your hand gets kind of weird, right?
Yeah.
But it does provide the other one drop. I just can't imagine a scenario where he gets Chain Whirlered. I mean, I'm sure it'll happen, but like, man, he's going to get big and fast. And I would say this is going to be on the top tier list of triggers I miss from creatures dying.
For sure.
I mean, I'm sure I'm going to hit it every time a creature enters the battlefield, but I'm going to put a lot of Steelleaf Champions in the graveyard and then forget, you know? The next card I want to talk about that kind of is on everyone's radar, and I read it, and I had in my head that Surveil must be something other than what I thought it was because this card is, like, too good. And, like, I can't believe they're printing this card, okay? Granted, it's 5 mana, but here it is. So it's Doom Whisperer, 3 black for a creature Nightmare Demon. It has flying, it has trample, okay? And you can pay 2 life, surveil 2, which is look at the top 2 cards of your library, put any number of them on top of in your graveyard and the rest on top of your library in any order. So basically, if you have 10 life to work with, you can look at 10 cards from your deck. Like, there's no turn restriction on this.
Do you remember when we were talking about, like, that surveil mechanic and how, like, I wonder if there anything's busted's going to actually happen with this? I mean, I don't know busted or not, but, man, that's some value. That's some really good value.
Honestly, this feels like Consecrated Sphinx to me. And I know you weren't around for that being in Standard, but Consecrated Sphinx was... You know, you felt like if your opponent could untap with that card, then you are in huge trouble. Okay? So Consecrated Sphinx was a 4 blue-blue for a 4-6 or 5-6 Sphinx. When your opponent draws a card, you draw 2 cards.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay? And it got even worse when both players had a Consecrated Sphinx because it would become exponential. And you could actually draw your entire deck if your opponent, you know, also let you draw his entire deck. So anyway... Which, what a nightmare that was. But this feels like that. Like, granted, yes, if Standard is hyper aggro and you don't have a ton of life to play with, oh, wait a minute, it's a 5-mana 6-6 flying trample with no downside. So I guess there is no, like, this card is Standard banana. I mean, what do you think, man?
Yeah, it's great. I mean, trying to figure out, like, where it fits, but I mean, like, anything that's just wanting more information in their deck, right? Anything that wants to dig further in their deck is going to be playing something like this. So, I mean, it may have some sort of like mid-range or control-ish Esper deck or Grixis deck, blue-black deck. I don't know exactly what that's going to be, but it's good. I mean, just maybe that theoretical green-black deck that I really want to be good, like this green-black aggro deck with... the Assassin Dagger or whatever, and some other things. I think this is that card that I'm looking for. So pretty good.
Okay, let me walk you through the scenario that's going to feel real terrible. I turn 5 to Fairy. Pass. You do some stuff. Who cares? Pass back. I go turn 6, cast this guy, plus to Fairy, untap 3. And then I have 3 mana and the ability to sift through my deck. How are you? And by the way, he blocks Teferi. He blocks every single creature in Standard, including Lyra Dawnbringer. Like, what?
Yeah.
At instant speed, this card, what in the world, man? and maybe this is old, you know, old magic Curtis talking, where like I feel like if this creature was printed 10 years or I'm sorry, in the late 90s or something, it would slam dunk be the best creature in Magic. Like not even a question.
Yeah.
So anyway, I think this card is just bananas. Black has to be actively bad for this thing to not see play.
It's true.
All right, last card that I want to go over, Cameron. What do you got for me?
Midnight Reaper. It costs 2 colorless and a black for 3/2 zombie knight. Whenever a non-creature, whenever a non-token creature you control dies, Midnight Reaper deals 1 damage to you and you draw a card. This definitely has some like synergy with Vraska, I think, as far as like that sacrifice ability, where just gets you over the edge if you need it. Combo potential, I don't know. Like, I'm sure there's something out there where like just being able to deal 1 damage and sacrifice and recur, maybe in Modern or Legacy, that exists. Sounds kind of interesting and spicy. I don't know, maybe.
Yeah, this might be a sideboard special. I'm not sure, but like, you know, if you get Wrathed and you get to draw 5 or 6 cards, like that's okay. The kind of unfortunate thing is, you know, in the Knights deck, assuming there is going to be a black white Knights deck, maybe there won't be, but you know, if you have History of Benalia, you know, you're producing these tokens. There's other cards that produce Knight tokens, and you know, you want it in a Knights deck, but this has to be a non-token creature. Meanwhile, the zombie end of this card might be what we're looking for, right? Because you can recur zombies so easily, you can sacrifice zombies so easily, et cetera, et cetera. But there is, I'd say, some engine potential here, Cameron.
For sure. For sure.
All right, man. So we're going to do, next week, we're going to do our metagame breakdown for what we think Standard is going to look like. Then the week after that will be kind of weird because it's our non-traditional road trip episode.
Yeah.
And so that will probably be a lot of audio and probably, I mean, I think we went into like getting massages last time. So.
I mean, yeah, that and discussing Proust. I mean, the ethics of Scientology. Yeah, like science fiction and, you know, and so, whatever.
Well, just throw in Scientology, all of it, Cameron.
Yeah, all of it.
Yeah, you might like get a 5-hour podcast and, you know, a third of it is us reenacting Midnight in the Garden of Good and Evil. Who knows? Who knows?
I love it.
Anyway, so we got some video games to talk about. So we're going to talk about that in the final segment. We'll be right back. So Cameron, you're playing yet another Switch game.
It's portable, man, and there's nothing better to take on an airplane than a Nintendo Switch. Not kidding.
I'll take your word for it. So you're playing City Skylines, which I just know of as a city builder, like SimCity.
Yeah, it is a SimCity ripoff, only I would say it's a little bit more nuanced and maybe in-depth in certain areas than SimCity is. Mm-hmm. And this came out like maybe 3 years ago on PC. And I know it had some really good reviews when it was initially released. City Builder. You have a plot of land, water is coming through it, and you have to zone it. So you build power plants, you create commercial, residential, industrial zones. You build schools, hospitals, and you just watch your city grow, try to build income to invest in more and get, you know, a larger population so that, and it just goes on and on and on and on. What makes this different than something like SimCity that you might be familiar with is just the level of detail that you can zoom in on. It's really quite incredible. Like every single character, person that lives in your city has a name, an occupation that you can follow, see what their health and their happiness is. And it's like so minute in its details. It's fascinating. And I will just like spend like 15 minutes watching my little character go from their house, commute to the building here, and then come back. Like, I mean, it's really interesting in that sense. I would say that if you're going to get this game and you haven't played it, get it on a PC instead of the Switch. Because there's so much detail and like you have to draw certain things in order to like zone your areas, doing that with like two joysticks is really, really difficult, to the point of almost being a little too frustrating at points. I still enjoy the game. I think the music's good. I think I like the aesthetic and the look. And I'm a huge fan of like city builder sort of things. I've liked Roller Coaster Tycoon and like that sort of thing. I really get into those. And this is right up there. It's good. And I just love the idea of having this as a portable solution. So it's not perfect. It's a little frustrating in some ways with the controls, but if you haven't played it, you're into these sorts of things, you have a Switch, there's no reason not to get it.
Okay. Do you find yourself sometimes coming down with a case of, I guess this is probably way more me than you, a case of the Yabbits on Switch? Like, you say City Skylines, but yeah, but it's got lots of text and blah, blah, blah. Yeah, but and End of the Breach just kind of is the one that doesn't have any yeah buts. You know, it's just like...
I agree. Yeah, yeah.
You know, like Wolfenstein 2 is one of my favorite stories for a video game ever. Cameron, there's no way on earth you should play that on a Switch.
Uh-huh.
Okay? Even though your TV screen is roughly the size of the LCD screen on the Switch. I think that would be a horrible disservice to the game, okay?
Yeah, yeah.
One day, Cameron, I mean, I feel like at some point you will actually get a television of a reasonable size. Maybe.
Maybe. Maybe.
But yeah, dude, this is why you like the Switch so much. You hold the LCD screen like close to your face.
So good.
You're like, oh my God. This 720p is amazing.
Yeah.
Anyway,
I thought the DS was great.
I just wanted to talk about the PlayStation Classic, PlayStation Mini, PlayStation. I mean, hey, look, it's really a mystery to me where they came up with such an idea.
Where did they come up?
Oh, Cameron. Oh, what a nightmare this is for me. Because I am like PlayStation 1 fanboy to the max.
You are. Yeah.
I love that system. I have still many of my PlayStation 1 games. In fact, looking over on my bookshelf, I still have the long box copy of the first Wipeout. Okay?
Like, okay.
I love the PlayStation 1. I think it's easily in the discussion. I think of greatest systems of all time. I think the only other systems that
after
really compete
with... Nintendo systems, then yes.
Oh, God, Cameron. Oh, God.
Just kidding, kidding.
No, I honestly think it goes NES, PS1, PS2 in terms of all-time libraries. And then Super Nintendo. Again, the Super Nintendo has a great library, but it's very, if you sit down and look at it, super top-heavy.
It's a little anemic, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it's got like, and then the N64 people, like, get out of here. You've got four good games, and then the rest is not worth your time. But anyway, they have 20 games, two controllers...
Mm-hmm.
$100. And I just, as somebody that didn't grow up with the PlayStation 1, right? Like kids had them, but you didn't have one. What would interest you to play on the system?
It's a fascinating thing, right? Like out of those 20 games, what do I want? And they're like because I've been trying to build myself up to have like the gaming library encyclopedia knowledge that you have. Ever since we did, fun fact, the last podcast we did, which you can't find anywhere on the internet anymore.
Well, for good reason. It's actually terrible.
For good reason. But yeah. Regardless, since then, I've always been trying to like just build up my catalog. So I've played like the Metal Gear Solids. I've played Final Fantasy VII. I don't know, because like the things that I played as a kid, like overnight when we would have like sleepovers or whatever, were always like Madden or like whatever WWF wrestling game was out, right? So I don't really have like a strong affinity for what I would say. You probably have a very definitive, here are the 20 games this system has to have, right?
Yeah, that's true. And I'm very worried that I'm going to buy it because I'm a sap and I don't want them to do this. I want them to put PlayStation 1 games, make them playable on a PS4, because that's what you freaking should do. It's the right thing to do. It infuriates me that the PlayStation 3 can play every PlayStation 1 game, but not the PS4. I don't know what kind of crazy world we're living in where Microsoft is the only one that seems to care about this stuff, because they used to be the ones that absolutely did not care about it. Don't even get me started on the Nintendo stuff. I know you bought a Nintendo Online Pass, Cameron, and I don't want to even... I don't even want to air all the judgments I will lay down upon you for that. Paying $20 a year or whatever to play ice hockey. Come on. Anyway. You're laughing. I know you're going to do this, Cameron.
No, like seriously, my wife and I were both sitting on the couch heavily considering whether or not we should do that.
Oh, well, we could play Dr. Mario for the 80th time.
Yeah, exactly.
Seriously, though, Dr. Mario's a good game. But the thing that scares me is they are not going to release any of the Konami games on this, including Metal Gear Solid and Castlevania Symphony of the Night. They've only announced like Tekken, Jumping Flash, Final Fantasy VII, one of the Ridge Racers, not even like the original Ridge Racer, which I think is kind of sad. And I can't remember the fifth game. But Tekken 3 is like an all-time great fighter. I have no issues with that. Jumping Flash is very weird, but worth it. But yeah, I'm very worried that we're going to miss out on the actual quintessential games from that, because they've been either re-released in something else, or, you know, like you could make a pretty strong argument that Crash Bandicoot 1, 2, or 3 should be on there. Well, those just got remastered, right? Mm-hmm. I think you could make a really strong argument for Street Fighter Alpha 3, which... My belief is that's the greatest fighting game of all time, but it's definitely in the conversation through a lot of people. I'm not original in that thought. But you got to have one of the Wipeouts. You got to have the Colony Wars. You know, some of these other RPGs. They have Wild Arms. That's the fifth game, which I think is underrated. But Suikoden, which is another Konami game, which is an unbelievably classic RPG. If none of these Konami games get on there, it's a total waste. That was the last time that Konami was... actually a tier one developer, and I would argue probably Square Enix too. But yeah, I mean, I'm almost definitely going to buy it. This is how sad my life is, Cameron. I've considered upgrading my Apple Watch so I don't buy myself a PlayStation Classic for Christmas, as a Christmas gift to myself, right?
Sure, sure, yeah.
So, you know, these are the catch-22s of Curtis's life. What a first-world problem, you know, I have here.
Absolutely. I love it. I love it. It's so good.
I mean, it's just the closest I can get to feeling like you. You know what I mean?
Sure, so, sure. If you can.
Yeah.
I don't know.
All right, man. So, hey, if someone would like to get in touch with you and talk to you about this contest where they have but a few more days to enter the Patreon to get a chance to win a Jace from World Wake. That's, we'll say LP, right?
Mm-hmm. MP, somewhere in the between.
Yeah, it's been touched by the hand of Cameron. And so some other creased things that we're given. Yeah.
No, it's not creased.
He will send you a Polaroid of him licking the Jace, if that's what, you know, what does it for you. So anyway, they can find you where?
They can find that on Twitter, @Cameron_McCoy.
I am @CurtisNow. Our official show feed is @SpikeFeedMTG. We'll check you guys next week.